You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Greetings from Spencer's Coffee in beautiful downtown Bowling Green. I am your host, Captain Dean, and my guests are an amazing singer-songwriter, guitar player, leader, so to speak, whatever you want to call it, and an incredibly talented drummer from the band Wet Eyed Liars, Melissa Jones and Joshua Riddle. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for meeting me here. I love this place. It's a wonderful place to be.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Well, I'm going to start with you, Melissa.
Okay.
Where are you from?
Here-ish. I was born in Wisconsin, though.
Okay.
But both my parents are from here, and we moved back down here more or less. I was 7, 8 or so.
Okay. So pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what got you into music?
I've always loved music. We always sang a lot with my sister, my dad, and I. But I started playing violin, actually, whenever I was about 10 years old. And I did orchestra and solo stuff. And when I was about 20, I wanted to sing and play. And you can't really sing and play violin. I mean, you can, but I can't.
I would find that very difficult.
Yeah, I can't, personally. So I started teaching myself guitar.
Okay. And how old were you about that age?
20. 20? Yeah, about 20.
And, like, what got you into, like, maybe your first band? Or when did you kind of branch into that?
Everything? This is my first and only band.
Great.
Yeah. I really did not. I had no desire to play publicly. I have a lot of stage fright. But
and not long ago, I heard you guys on Revolution local
shows, yeah.
And I kind of caught some of that interview. And some of these things that I'm asking were brought up, but I have to go, ooh, oh, really? Because I already know some of these. But I didn't know that. I heard you talk about that. So
yeah, I have bad stage fright, but it's gotten better. Other people just kind of got me into it.
I think with each show, you kind of learn and get more comfortable, maybe in the role of what you're doing. Just more comfortable in general on stage and in front of an audience and things of that nature. But as a songwriter, I mean, you're sharing a very deep inside part of you, you know? And so
yeah.
I can imagine it's difficult.
It's really nerve-wracking.
Public speaking on top of singing and playing an instrument, that is just a lot more added to the whole thing for anybody that has stage fright. So I can imagine what that's like.
Yeah.
So cool. That's very cool. Josh?
Josh is fine. Yeah. No, it doesn't matter.
When did you start? Where are you from?
I'm originally from Glasgow.
Excellent.
So not too far from here.
Not too far. You're pretty much a local in the music scene.
Yeah. I've lived here. Well, I first moved down here probably around 2001-ish. Stayed here for a couple of years and then went back to Glasgow and then came back down here in 2008 and I've been here ever since.
Came down to cruise the mall and
was cruising the mall. Yeah,
buy the new Poison album.
Hanging out at Spencer's Gifts.
when did you? Have you always been a drummer primarily? Or
I had interest in music from a very young age. Just always loved listening to all the old 60s and 70s classics on the radio and everything. And originally wanted to play piano. My aunt plays piano, and we had the piano at my grandma's house and then at my aunt's house. And they would always play, and I loved it and always tried to play. So I was like, yeah, I want to take lessons. So I banged around on it for a little while and then tried to take formal lessons with my music teacher in elementary school. This was probably fourth or fifth grade, maybe. And I was horrible at it, and I was very impatient. And I was like, I'm not immediately amazing at this, so I quit. And I was like, I don't want to do this. I want to do something else. And
you have to be immediately amazing.
Yeah, if you're not immediately amazing, then what's the point?
And so then you were immediately amazing as a drummer.
Yes. I picked up drums and I was, you know, phenomenal. But no, I kind of bounced from that to trying to learn how to play guitar, to teach myself how to play guitar, and wasn't good at that either. My fingers aren't very coordinated, I found out. But then probably around 12 or 13, one of my friends, we'd always just listen to punk music and stuff, a lot of Misfits and stuff like that.
Excellent.
And we just started covering a lot of Misfit songs
you're
in his basement.
My language.
So yeah, that's kind of how I started. It's the simplest and easiest thing to play on drums. All the songs are basically the same.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, they definitely had their own thing.
You know? So, yeah, that's kind of how I started getting into drums and then just kind of grew from there.
Awesome. Well, I love that. Yeah. I don't meet a lot of punk background people.
You know? No, that's I started out straight punk and that all the Ramones, Misfits, all that.
Fantastic. You're now my favorite person. I've talked to a lot of people from the Glasgow area since I've started hosting these podcasts. And again, I'll just touch on the fact that that area, that there's something in the water up there. It's such a very deep rooted music connection.
Yeah, there
almost
is.
Almost like a family tree of sorts of music that's been passed down from generations up there. What's your take on that? What is your view of what Glasgow and music go together?
I think it's kind of like sort of like Appalachian music, a lot of like mountain bluegrassy type feel, but I think it kind of came down from Appalachia and, you know, made its way west towards the Glasgow and Edmonton area.
It came to a stop.
Came to a stop there. But like, you know, the whole Glasgow and Edmonton area, it's very southern rock based, but then there is that tinge of kind of country Appalachia as well. Right. Mm-hmm. So then you get people like Kentucky Headhunters and you know, of course, Blackstone Cherry coming out of the Edmonton, Glasgow area. And so I think it just kind of kept moving west until it hit Bowling Green, and then you get Nashville influence coming up from the south. So.
And the cool thing about the Headhunters history, which if anyone goes back in the Sound Atlas to listen to Richard Young or Greg Martin's episode, they talk about how Itchy Brother came together. Those guys were in high school when Cream and Hendrix and you know, all of that were the thing. It was new and it was fresh and it was on the radio. And so it was interesting, I would think, to be guys in the deep country of Kentucky, but catching on to these things that were on AM radio. Rock bands from, you know, not only America, but England and all of that stuff. And they crabbed onto that and rode that wave really good.
Yeah, and Kentucky.
And of course, Itchy Brother was more of like a Zeppelin type band, I think, than what the Headhunters became.
Yeah.
But their influences still come through, and I think musically you can hear it. But I just always thought the Glasgow itself is like a music scene of its own.
Yeah, it is. It's sad that there weren't more places for like me to play when I was younger, because we didn't have any place to go. It was just either a friend's basement, or if you could make it to Bowling Green somehow, then you could, you know, there were places like Diggler's and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, we could play. But, well, you know, Glasgow didn't have anywhere to play back then.
Melissa, you said this is your first band.
Uh-huh.
But Joshua, what were one of your first bands, or what did you get into once you got good at drumming?
He's been in so many
bands. Oh, I don't even remember.
I've heard your name for years, but I don't think we've really passed.
I was thinking about that the other day. It surprises me that we've never crossed paths or played in the bands together, because I've played with so many.
And I mentioned that with someone else. I was like, it's a small music scene, but it's so big and kind of diverse that a lot of us do kind of have the ships in the night kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, we hear names and we know of bands, but maybe don't go out and catch them.
Yeah.
Or your band's busy when that band's playing.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just one of those kind of things. But yeah, you've been active for how long now?
I mean, like I said, I started playing, you know, Misfits punk band stuff and cover bands like when I was 13-ish. And
were these bands that played out?
No, we just played in the basement, you know. I guess my first band that I ever played out was probably, I did Section 8 for a while.
That was the second Section 8. That's great. Were you with Chris Perkins?
Yeah, with Chris Perkins.
Fantastic.
And John Doyle. Yeah.
See, I was originally in Section 8, but it was the Section 8 from 1992.
Oh, I did not
know. Which became Marijuana Catfish.
Okay, yeah. I've heard of Marijuana Catfish. I did not know there was a previous Section 8, though.
We were Section 8 before Marijuana Catfish. But it was a very brief name. It only lasted for like 3 months or something.
Gotcha.
Right when I joined the band.
Gotcha.
But that's funny. I've always heard there were two Section 8s, and I became friends with Chris.
Yeah.
And he passed away a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were like neighbors. He lived really close to me, and we got really close, and we were about to get together and do some recording when he died.
Yeah. Mm.
So unfortunately, it never happened.
But yeah, he was a phenomenal guitar player.
Cool. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that band, and I'm glad we're able to talk about Chris Perkins in one of these episodes, because he's gone and he's not here to talk about what he did, but you are. And so tell me about Section 8.
Section 8 was probably, the like I said, one of the first bands that I played out a lot. Another one was Framed. We didn't do a whole lot of stuff, but we did like name. Local...
there may have been two Frames.
Maybe. Yeah, we were Framed with PH.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, so we played Digglers and house parties and stuff like that, but we never... I don't think we ever played a bar or anything.
And what year was
parties.
All of this?
Framed was probably 98...
97,
98, I guess, and then Section 8 was right around the same time, a little bit after that, maybe.
Right.
They kind of blurred together. But yeah, with Section 8, we ended up playing Nashville a couple times, and Louisville, I think Phoenix Hill, and a couple other places like that. So yeah, we only ended up putting out one album.
Yes, and Chris had a copy of it, and he let me borrow it one time, and I was so stupid I didn't like burn a copy for myself. So I need to get in contact with... widow,
yeah.
And see if I can borrow that.
Do you have any copies?
I might have a copy.
You have a copy?
Yeah,
I've
at least I think got a digital copy. I don't think I have any physical copies anymore.
Have you thought about uploading that online for just to simply be there?
Yeah, I should do that. Put it on SoundCloud or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have the tracks, put it out.
Yeah,
let the world hear
I
it.
I should do that. I do know that as far as Framed goes, JD Minor uploaded a bunch of Framed.
Awesome.
Stuff that was recorded live at the Armory down here,
yeah,
when we played.
Yeah.
Of course, horrible quality, but you know, it was the Armory, so.
Right. Yeah, JD was like the first episode of the Sound Atlas.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, JD's been in a ton of bands, and I was in Framed with him, so.
Yeah, I recently got to work with him. Again, another guy I've heard about, known about for years, but have never crossed paths and hung out. He's in a Red Hot Chili Pepper tribute band,
yep.
Called The Bad Dudes.
Yeah, we caught them the last time they played. They
and,
were awesome.
I got to fill in for Nick Rouse on drums, and they played a show in Clarksville. As of taping this was just a few weeks ago. That was so
awesome.
Fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, JD and Josh Hines are in Dos Cobras,
yep.
Together.
Mm-hmm. They're great, too.
Great bands around here. Great people.
Yeah.
So you've got to work with a lot of the scene... Like legends.
Yeah, I guess if you can call us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legends.
I mean, at this age, we all have a history.
Yeah.
So we can kind of claim that. So, Section 8, Framed, what else?
That's pretty much it, other than when I started with the Lost River Cavemen.
See, and I knew this. I should have done my homework. I knew you were in that band.
Yeah, I was. Greg Ed was the first drummer.
Yeah,
and then after he left, I came in. I think he was with them for maybe a year or so, maybe 2 years, and then I came in after that. And I think that was around, I want to say 2004 or 2005,
right.
Something like that.
And Lost River Cavemen were very active.
Yes, we toured all over the country.
Yeah,
we did three national tours.
Things.
Yeah, it was great. We ended up, our pinnacle was opening up for Marty Stewart. That's as big as we got before
Not
we
bad.
Disbanded. So,
I'm assuming, to ask a stupid question, the name did come from Lost River Cave here.
Yeah, it did. From what I can remember, and
very stupid question.
If Michael McMillan's listening to this, he's probably going to jump through the speaker and choke me because I'm going to get this story wrong. But I think, from what I remember, the name of the band came from an old barbershop quartet called the Mammoth Cavemen, I think is what they were called, or something like that.
I do know.
And so Michael had heard of them, and then he said he also wanted to always have a band named after a cave. And, of course, the local cave is
local
Lost River
connection.
Cave.
Yeah.
So he kind of put those two together and called it the Lost River Cavemen.
That's great. And how long were you in Lost River Cavemen?
Up until...
Caveman or Cavemen?
Men, plural. Yeah, yeah. From, like I said, 2004 or 5, I think, is when I started. And then we're technically, I guess, still together. We don't tour around, but we'll do like a reunion show every once in a while.
I thought I saw the name not that long ago.
Yeah, yeah. We played New Year's year before last. And then, I think another... We did something else. I can't remember what other show it was.
Yeah, it was just like a reunion.
Been a really good show.
Yeah, we'll just do like... Yeah, I don't remember any of it. We'll do one show every couple years or something like that.
Okay.
Though we basically stopped touring, I think, in 2014, I think.
Okay. And that kind of brings up to almost modern day.
Yeah, yeah.
Melissa, when did you kind of discover that your singing and songwriting was needing to be on stage? Or how did you even get, which again, I heard all
yeah.
this recently. Tell again the story about what, I guess, prompted you to take your art and present it in public.
They more or less tricked me. they I knew John Shelton and Corey Agent from Mellow Mushroom.
Right.
And Josh was looking for another project just to play drums and, you know, keep sharp. And they were like, let's just make music to some of your songs and we'll just practice and we never have to play anywhere. It'll just be fun. Then they were like, we're going to have a Halloween show at our house. We'll just play the Halloween show. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And they were like, well, you'll be in costume. Yeah, no one will even know it's you. So we played it, and then they just never stopped making me play shows.
Yeah, we were just like, we'll do one more.
Like, let's do a Kiss thing. Let's always do full makeup, masks. They weren't in with it. They weren't on board.
Well, it seems like you've gotten comfortable over time.
More or less. It's gotten easier, but...
Well, before the band, and before you got tricked into being a band, what were you doing prior to that, musically speaking, I guess?
I just played...
It's interesting that you
by myself
your only band,
for myself.
How do I even attack? Yeah, it's very rare to find somebody in a band and be like, "Oh, this is my only band."
10 years, yeah. Stories to tell with music.
You know? I don't.
Well, as a person that's been here for a long time and as obviously a fan of music, did you go out and see bands play?
Oh yeah, I always like when I was like 14, 15. I think I sing on a Nick Clark CD. I don't remember if it was Dr. Duke or... Oh. Nick Clark has some recording of me whenever I was a teenager. Awesome. But we would... I knew him, and I mean, he can play anything. And I would always go out to the bars and see bands play. Vile Jive, of course.
Okay, so we're talking like early 2000s.
Yeah,
area.
Yeah. I mean, I was older then.
I just interviewed Kelby Thursday, so he's got an episode coming up.
Oh, man, I can't wait until the Vile Jive show coming up.
Oh, yeah. I love Vile Jive. Awesome.
Yeah.
And even, like, Perfect Confusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they doing a reunion?
I don't think so. Yeah. Don't think they have to.
They did. It was on South Campus. Everybody did.
Right.
Who else did you go out to see? Like, did any of these bands you were going to see even have an influence on you that you wanted to do that?
I enjoyed going out and seeing bands, but I had no desire to sing my own songs in front of people. Yeah, I was just a fan. I love music. I listen to all different kinds of things, and I love the energy of live shows.
On your level of just singer-songwriter, like, what do you listen to?
I listen to...
Misfits and Ramones.
Yeah.
I like the Misfits. I'm not a big Ramones fan. I mean, I grew up listening to all different kinds of singers. My dad really liked bluegrass. So... likes mainly instrumental bluegrass, but we would still get that sort of Alison Krauss and all
that. On that, because there's something about male singing bluegrass that bothers me. But now I can listen to Alison Krauss all day.
Oh yeah,
like, I love Alison Krauss.
Alison Krauss, she's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And with my mother, we would listen to like Tracy Chapman and Tori Amos and Ani DiFranco and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so I had a nice, well-rounded representation of singer-songwriters. My dad loved Townes Van Zandt and John Prine. There's
so
tons of that.
Listening to a lot of diverse.
Oh yeah.
Quality.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
I got to see like The Cure in concert when I was little, and I went to Lollapalooza in '97.
Excellent.
When I was 8.
Fantastic.
But yeah, I had a lot of exposure to different kinds of music growing up.
Good. And that's obviously coming out through you now as a singer and songwriter, I guess.
I guess so. I don't really go for like a specific sound.
Diverse in what they listen to.
Yeah.
They're open-minded. They're open to listening to a variety of different types of music. It does kind of over time, I think, come through.
Yeah.
Not as an influence, but as you pick little things from maybe a huge vast of music, and you're like, I like this, I like this, I like this, and it eventually might show.
Yeah, even if it's unconscious, you'll still
exactly.
Do it. Yeah.
I'm a lyrics person. There are good lyrics.
You're not going to listen to a song and rip it off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you might hear a neat melody in a bridge or something and go, that's cool, I think I can do something like that. Does that come through in what you do?
I don't have a very intentional songwriting process.
It just kind of happens,
and I feel like I don't really have much control over what I do.
That's really cool. Because a lot of people force it. And
I cannot do that.
Yeah.
I kind of just, which I said, I mean, I play simple 4/4 things, and then I guess it's kind of just stream of consciousness writing. And when I like something, an idea, I kind of build the song around that idea or mindset. But I don't, I'm not like, I'm going to write a song about this. That's never happened.
That's cool. I guess that will lead into the band, Wet Eyed Liars. Such a cool name. So how did the two of you get together and meet?
Of all places, we met at Tidballs.
Yeah. Mention that.
Such a romantic place.
Yeah, I know. That was in 2011.
Okay.
And so the Cavemen were still active then, and we were getting ready to put out our last record. When we started dating, we were getting to record that, and then Melissa actually sang on one of the songs that's on that album.
Excellent.
And then...
Are all of the Cavemen records, like, available...
Yeah, they're
maybe
all
online.
They're all online. Yeah, you can find them everywhere. I actually have hard copies of the last two. I don't think I have any of the first record.
You know where
and
they
vinyl.
Need to be? Is it Mellow Mass?
Yeah.
They might actually be there still. I think I brought some there a long time ago, and I don't think anybody bought them, so they might still be there.
Well, you have to promote it.
But yeah, that's kind of how we got together to play music. Was she played on, or she sang on the one Cavemen song. And then she had been playing her just acoustic stuff that she was just kind of messing around with at the house.
Okay.
So I knew she could was working on learning how to play guitar, and I knew she could sing.
But it was kind of a nice introduction for you, maybe, to go into a recording situation with a band and see how that all works.
Yeah.
Almost kind of got your feet wet in that element.
Yeah. I don't even think I sang in front of Josh. Maybe the first 6 months or year we dated.
Yeah. I could always hear her singing in the other room, but it wasn't. I wasn't
the door
couldn't
and
look at her. Yeah,
stops.
It stops, and she's like, "Stop
much.
Looking at me."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, and then about when did we form? It was 2015. So yeah, we got together in 2011. We met in 2011, and I think it was September of 2015 when we started.
Wow, you're
playing.
Detailed. I ask these people all the time, so when did the band get started? Oh, man, I don't even know. What day is it?
I just know that it was a little bit before Halloween because we played our first show on Halloween, and I think we had only been together a couple months at that point.
Awesome.
So I'm pretty sure it was around September.
Keeping together pretty quick.
Yeah.
So you already had songs, obviously.
Yeah, I had quite a few songs that
and you just
I had written.
So many to them. And now, okay, look, I got to ask this before I forget. Who is in Wet Eyed Liars?
Of course, us two, Melissa Jones and Josh Riddle. And then the other members are John Shelton. He plays lead guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then Corey Agent plays bass.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, one of the band members is in the Rift. Am I wrong? I shouldn't have said that. Because
Corey
I'm
is
wrong.
In the Japanese Schoolgirls.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I knew there was somebody in something else.
Yeah. And then Corey and John used to be in Feltod Mavis.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Or no, Jessica Black. John used to be in Feltod Mavis, and then Corey and John used to both be in Jessica Black, I think that's right.
Fantastic local music scene connections there. So the band gets going in 2015, and didn't take long to get from the formation to performing. Like you said, it didn't take long. So how many songs did you present to them and get worked up? Just, I mean, maybe enough to do a show?
Yeah.
I think you maybe had two or three right off the bat.
Yeah,
and
we
then John had,
Yeah, we kind of did a couple more covers in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you
grew
together enough to maybe do like a 30.
Yeah, we could do like a 30, 40
minute
set.
We had like a 45 minute set pretty much right off. And yeah, just kept writing songs and adding to it.
And it just went from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 4 years strong at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what have you done in the time since the band got together? Have you recorded and released anything? Where are we at?
Yeah, we are wanting to record a full length, but we've just...
You've just been a live band.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
You haven't really...
We have like a...
We did an EP.
You did?
Five song EP.
I was going to say, I thought you did.
Yeah.
Because I remember a poster for the show.
Yeah.
Maybe doing like an EP release party.
Yeah, yeah, we did. That was in 2017. We went to Thundersound Studios in Franklin with Billy Swayze's studio.
Yeah.
And recorded, I think we recorded six songs there, but we released five. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
He was great.
Yeah, we were actually hoping, and the last time I had talked to him was about us getting back in the studio to record our new album.
That's terrible.
So, yeah, that's awful. But we're still wanting to record those songs, and I think we're ready to do it. We've got almost enough for a full length now.
Well, there's definitely a lot of choices around here, not just people with home studios, but obviously really nice studios are around here.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But you're just... not really nailing anything down, just the ideas there. Obviously, you've got the songs.
Yeah, the songs are there.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, mostly money.
Yeah, it's mostly money. We want to do it right.
So, as of this podcast, we're going to start a GoFundMe.
Yes.
To make the next Wet Out Liars. You got to make a full-length album.
There you go.
Point.
Yeah.
Needs to do that, man.
We're all about it.
It needs to happen.
Give us your money and we'll do it.
You want to hear these songs, you got to pay for it.
It's almost like music and television go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Well, as of right now, like I said, you've been a band for 4 years. You've been pretty strong. I mean, you guys perform a lot. I see your name all the time.
We try to play as much as possible.
And you do. Obviously, locally speaking, you're at Tidwell's.
Yeah.
That's like home base for you.
Yeah.
What else around here or even in this general area have you done?
Of course, we played Rockies locally. We did Riblickers in Glasgow once.
Right.
A-Frame.
I think that's
so
all.
Pretty much hit everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as downtown Bowling Green goes.
Yeah.
And then everything else has been Louisville, Lexington, Nashville,
right.
Kind of regionally.
Have you done good with building a fan base? I know you do pretty good here.
It's slow in the other cities. You know how it can be. You know, it's hit or miss. Sometimes you'll get a decent crowd and people will buy your stuff.
On what team is playing that night?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, and we just recently had an experience with this in Lexington. It was I don't even remember what was going on. It was a football thing or something, and we showed up to the show and there was literally no one there. And we could not go on stage until the game was over. So we just kind
of
sat over to the side and waited.
Like, okay, very important.
Yeah. So it's those kind of things, but you know. We've had fun, no matter what. Even if it's not a great crowd, we still have fun doing it.
Right. So. Okay. Well, obviously you're going strong. Band's doing good. You're active. You're playing. You got to make that record.
Oh, yeah.
Got to get that GoFundMe up and running. What do you see on the future for you guys? Obviously, it's 2019 now for the taping of this podcast. What's on the calendar for you guys?
Just play more shows and get a recording. It gets more and more difficult for us because Melissa and I both work full time,
right?
And then so the band has to take a backseat at a certain point.
It gets so much more fun the older you get.
Yeah.
Almost with every birthday, it's like harder and harder
it
to
is.
Get together.
Like, yeah, it is. It's trying to, you know.
But my thing with music is it's not about finding time. It's about making.
Yeah,
you have to make time for it.
Yeah, so we've set our basement up to record. So we're trying to at least record demos and play more. Just you know, in our basement to get stuff written and stuff ready for the studio. And then I'm just trying to reach out to more venues and cities that we haven't played and to build the fan base, pretty much.
Right. Well, and it keeps you active. Keeps you focused on what you're doing, what the goal of everything about this band is about.
Yeah.
I'm going to shift gears a little bit
before
I get into the end perspective of how I do these things. I've seen photos of you, Melissa, on stage with a Telecaster. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Is that your primary guitar? And what is it about the Telecaster that stood out to you? Did you test anything else prior to that, or is it just
no.
the guitar you love and more comfortable with?
It was a Christmas gift from Josh. So
Merry Christmas.
He picked it out, and because I had only ever done acoustic stuff, and whenever we started playing out, actually people just let me borrow their electric guitars to play, which is very nice of them. And Josh bought me the Telecaster. So that's what I play with the band. Yeah. I still play acoustic or acoustic electric a lot.
So
just
you
like
do kind of on stage? Like,
no, I haven't.
All electric on stage?
But she just got one,
I just
so
got
she's
going
to try
electric.
To incorporate it.
I'm going to try to incorporate that. Yeah, but
I'm a Fender guy, so I always have to point it out when I see somebody playing some cool Fender.
Basically, it's a pretty guitar.
It is very pretty. And I mean, obviously, is it comfortable?
Yeah, it's very comfortable. I like playing it. I don't consider myself enough of a guitarist to really know all the intricacies. Yeah.
So
I'm a singer that can play some guitar.
Right, but that's a good choice.
But I like the tone, and I think that it it fits well with.
I mean, there's a stark I noticed the difference between a Telecaster and a Stratocaster, Gibsons, like everything, just they all have their own kind of sound.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed a lot of like songwriters, especially in the kind of genre of what you guys do, a lot of them lean toward Telecaster.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of what the body and the pickups and the makeup of what that guitar is.
Yeah.
I think it plays a big role in
it. It's got a really good, warm, clean sound.
Yeah, very clean. It's really good at clean. Obviously, a lot of country people for decades have gone for them for chicken picking.
Right.
But you're not doing that, are you?
Not much, no.
Give it a shot sometime. I'm sure it'd be fun.
Pick that chicken.
What if I could?
That'd be awesome.
Gotta try. Joshua.
Yeah,
I always want to say Josh.
You can say Joshua.
So
I don't care.
It's it's not on your Facebook page. It says Joshua.
That's fine.
What are you playing on these days?
Because
I can talk drums all day long.
And I'm kind of in the same boat as Melissa. I've never been a gearhead.
Right. Find something that's good.
I
looks
like
good. Sounds good.
I can play on pretty much anything. Right now, I'm playing on a Mapex M series, and I love it. It's what I played on for most of the caveman days.
Okay.
It was a good middle of the road as far as price range goes, and it's got a good sound. And that's pretty much
and it. It looks good.
It looks good. It's got a good, nice red finish on it, and I like it. As far as cymbals go, I'm not like a loyalist to a certain brand.
Right.
I've got a mishmash of like four different kinds, and I just pick whatever fits the sound for that area I want
to
hit.
I used to do that, but I've been with Wuhan for like 15 years now.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm all Wuhan.
Well, if I could get sponsored or something like that, that might be good, you know, but now I'll just take whatever
is
I can get for cheap.
Are we trying to make a hint for somebody?
Yeah.
All right, Zildjian, Sabian, exactly. Pisces, if you're out there listening.
There you go.
And there's so many more now. I can't even keep up with how many brands.
Yeah, I have no idea. But no, I've never been a loyalist to any type of brand or anything. I just, whatever I can afford.
You've had that kit for how long?
I've had this kit since probably 2008, maybe.
Cool.
So a while.
See, I worked at Forks Drum Closet for a long time, and Nashville is headquarters for the U.S. headquarters for Pearl and Mapex.
Yeah.
So I got to know the Mapex guys pretty good.
Awesome.
And they would come in, and we got, like, cool deals.
That's where I got this kit, was at Forks. Yeah.
And, I mean, I never owned a Mapex kit, but I've played on several.
Yeah.
And I always thought they were really good.
I like them. The only other kit I've ever owned was a Ludwig.
Yeah.
And actually, Jared McKinney, who does Nightmare House Studios, he's just opening up his studio back up.
No, and I saw that.
He has my old drum kit, which was the kit that I played in Framed and in Section 8.
I saw a photo of him the other day showing off the studio setup, and he had a picture of the drum.
Yeah, it used to be solid black.
James came in and played on
James was playing on them. Yeah. But that was my old kit, and I sold it to him a few years back, and then now he's refinished them and painted them funky colors, and they're in his studio. So
I was going to say, I remember it was kind of an off-color thing.
Yeah.
But it was cool looking. Well, there you go. I like to go off topic a little bit. as far as the local music scene goes, who are you guys a fan of?
Oh, we love everybody. There's so many.
Perfect answer.
I don't want to name two or three because I'm going to forget 15 if I do that, and so then people will hate me.
Well, I mean, of course, we all have friends that are in bands and stuff, and you're loyal to that.
Yeah.
But I've done a really good job over the past maybe 5 years of just kind of going out to see everybody.
Yeah.
And at least support everybody. And long before I was hosting this, I was kind of doing that already because I thought it was important.
Oh, yeah.
And
definitely.
What started that for me was I saw this really cool documentary on, I think it was, Pearl Jam, and they did an interview with Chris Cornell, and he was talking about how Seattle was such a close-knit music scene.
Yeah.
And the reason why he thought it was so successful is because they all helped each other.
Yeah.
And it just instantly set off this thing in my brain of, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, this music scene is so rich and diverse and with a long history of music to come from here. And I was like, I need to do that.
Yep.
Instead of being more self-centered and being like, my band is my band and that's what's important.
Yeah.
And you go out and you play shows and you only talk to the bands that you're playing with.
Yeah.
I started going out to see other bands and befriending these bands. And even musically, things that I'm not into.
Yeah.
I'll still support them. And
there are so many different sounds.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just one style coming out of Bowling Green.
Yeah.
So that's my thing of what triggered it for me. And I just thought it was really cool. In a way, Bowling Green has a Seattle kind of.
It does, yeah. I've always thought that. It used to be like that way more, like back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and we've kind of gone through a lull, I think. But I think we're getting back there.
I was part of the early 90s scene, and it was so cool.
Yeah, yeah. But
it was
I think we're
coming out of the 80s.
Yeah, definitely.
Hair metal dominated, and metal bands and rock bands were angry at us guys that were the alternative bands. But it's like right as Revolution or New Rock went on the air, like that changed everything. I think the club scene got different. It got a little more open, a little more diverse. And the genres kind of started merging together. And you could see some really interesting bands on the same bill at like Gary's and Thursdays and things of that nature. I'm sure you might recall some of that stuff.
Yeah, I remember those back in the day.
But come on, give me something. Who are you a fan of? You don't have to be super I'm about it.
One of my favorite new bands, and I'm going to mention them because they are brand new, and he's doing great things.
Daddy Sisters.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I interviewed Kenzie Crow the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And that was pretty much the only band she said. And I was like, amen.
I love her.
Yeah, Kenzie Crow's awesome, too. Yeah, she played a show with us once at Tidball. She's amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah,
I have to agree. And again, I said something to her about, I know Falcon, of him, I know who he is. I've never really hung out with him. I've never talked to him.
He's an amazing dude.
I've known him for years.
Yeah. Of course, I played in the Rocky Horror thing with him.
But he was in the Black Shades, correct?
Yes. Yeah, he did the Black Shades.
I knew that, but I just wanted to verify.
He's been everything. He's like a prolific songwriter. He just, I imagine, writes 4 to 5 songs a day.
I'm sure,
but
yeah.
This, like John Prine.
This band, the Daddy Sisters, is kind of fresh.
Yeah, they're brand new.
As of recording this, and just recently, within a week or two from recording this, I missed the show that was at Tidballs because I was in Nashville. But I was so mad because I wanted to be there to see that. And I was blown away at the video clips that were being shared. And then he did post one song, I think, online.
Yeah, they've got one recorded.
When I Grow Up, I Want to Be a Girl.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
It's an amazing song, yeah.
So I'm on board with that 100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Total fanboy on that. Daddy Sisters, come on, give me some love. Melissa, who are you a fan
of? I mean, Full Frontal Saurus.
Yeah, go buy Full Frontal Saurus' new album.
Yeah,
it just came out.
I already did. But you can tell everyone else, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, the Josephines always have a fun show. We never really go out and see anybody and aren't super.
Right.
It's not a super good vibe.
But you guys
share
a lot of bill with cool bands, too. I mean, when you book shows or if shows are booked and you're asked to be on, it's always like I see your name and then some really kick-ass bands next to it, you know?
Well, that's a big thanks to Tidballs, too. They help us out with pairing us up with some other bands,
John's
too.
John's great at picking.
Yeah.
And I don't ever doubt, like, when he makes a suggestion, it's like, hey, I trust your judgment.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think we have come to the end of our interview, and I hate that because these things seem to go very quick.
Yeah, it went pretty fast.
Is there anything I've missed? Anything you all wanted to talk about or promote as far as Wet Eyed Liars goes?
Just at our next show. I don't know if when this is going to air, so it'd probably be too late. But
I always tell people,
don't date anything.
But yeah. You can just talk in general.
What's going on. We're going to be playing in Louisville coming up, in Lexington and Nashville. So just get on our Facebook page and check out our next shows upcoming and come out and see us.
So you've got a Facebook page. Are you on any of the other...
We're on everything. We have we're at Wet Eyed Liars on Instagram and Twitter, Facebook. Our website is weteyedliars.com.
Okay.
We're on SoundCloud, Bandcamp, everything.
And you've released the EP, like
we
you
have.
Said.
We have the EP out, and
but
I think
as of
you can.
Right now, you're just demoing. You don't have anything new.
No,
we don't have
any new recordings. We just the live one that got recorded on Revolution on Local Shots is
right.
the only new song that's
Which
been recorded.
Really good, by the way. I tuned in.
Thank you.
I'm a hardcore fanboy of Hot Donna and the Local Shots show, I've supported Local Shots since, good Lord, I don't even know what year that began. But
yeah.
I mean, I've been on that show forever.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they're
I'm a
great.
Fan of it. I always tune in to whenever it's on. And I really applaud her for moving the time.
Yeah.
It used to be 10 to midnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a little earlier is nice.
She was the one that moved it to 7 o'clock or whatever. Like, good for you. You
know? Yeah.
You can get an audience now, you know?
Yeah.
Especially on a local music scene, I think people tune in more for that.
For sure. Yeah.
But Revolution is, I don't even know how to word it. I think it's not appreciated as much as it should be.
Yeah.
But it is a college radio. It does go on and off the air depending on the semester and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But that radio station's been on the air since 1988.
Wow.
And it really was dominant in like 91, 92.
Because
I was one of the first bands locally to be on it. It's great. It's so important to have that. So
yeah.
It's number two on my presets.
Well, yep.
Absolutely. Mine too.
Yeah.
And I mean,
I mean, you can't beat NPR,
you know?
But.
I mean, what they do with the noon show every day is like
'90s at noon or whatever is
well,
that we're talking about
Woohoo,
or
but
oh is it? Okay
got one too and it's like nostalgia at noon.
Okay yeah
and
oh
so
yeah
from noon to one they play all this like awesome my kind of era '90s and early
right.
2000s stuff but then at night they've got Revolution After Hours and they'll play some of the coolest stuff
yeah.
And I heard it last night. I was coming home at like midnight. They played the Misfits and they played R.E.M. and like what you would expect from a college radio station.
Right, yeah.
But they've been really good. I think everybody, including The Edge and D93, have all promoted local
mm-hmm.
music well.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys done those shows?
I've been trying to get on Tommy Starr show for a while with Wet Eyed Liars, but like his is three, and we don't get off work until 5, and his show ends at 5,
right.
And he's only Monday through Friday, so it's nearly impossible for us to make
right.
it over there.
Well,
but,
you can at least take the CD to him at some point, and
yeah.
he'll spin it.
Yeah, I've sent him the songs, but we really, really want to get over there to do an interview at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, it is. I get that. His show used to be on Sunday nights, too.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
it's just in the afternoon, which is cool. It's prime time.
Yeah. And I've done Brasher's show as well with Cavemen and stuff, but I haven't gotten over there with us
right.
yet.
Well, I suggest you get over there.
Yeah.
Well, if there's nothing else, I guess we'll wrap this up.
Sounds
I appreciate
good.
Yeah.
Your time.
Thank you for having
Thanks
us.
So much. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Melissa and Josh from Wet Eyed Liars, check them out online and go check them out live on stage when they have a show, and you will be very much happy you did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.